right. Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is Wednesday, March the 31st. My name is Eddie Lindenstein. And as always, I wanted to make sure that I thanked the patrons of the podcast. Let me give a big shout out to Nathan and Valerie and John, Brooke, Carrie, Jason, David, Colette, Matthew, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Francisco, Ashley, Michael, Victoria, Chad, Anthony, Jen, and Nate, Christina, Ross, Caroline, Julie, Casey, Brian, Arnie, Barb, and Kim. Thank you all so much for being supporters of the podcast, as always. I turned 35 since the last episode aired, and it was a wonderful birthday. I actually commented on my personal Facebook page that I cannot recall a birthday where I was happier, more satisfied in really all facets of life, and it was just great. I went out and did on Friday. My birthday was on Saturday, and on Friday, went out and did a long motorcycle day in the dirt, some in the snow, with some buddies of mine. We rode a few hundred miles, and so that was a blast. Got some great video, actually, and I put it on my Instagram page. If you're curious to see it, it is at Eddie Lindenstein is the Instagram handle for me. And then Saturday, I woke up, had breakfast in bed brought to me, which was cool. I got a GPS for my motorcycle for my wife. My kids made me some really cool artwork. And we went out and did a 5-mile hike as a family together, which was great. Took the dog and did all that kind of stuff and then had some beers with some buddies of mine over at a brewery. And then we had a nice dinner. Went and saw my mom. My dad was out of town, so went and saw my mom. And yeah, it was a really, really good, positive day. So we like that. I also did the University of Rochester class last week, which, I do have the video for that. So I'm going to turn it into audio and it's either going to air next week or the following. And I've got an interview to air either next week or the following. So it kind of depends on what the order is that I'll do there. But today I thought it'd be kind of cool to do a sort of a Q&A, but I posted on, Facebook this morning. I said, what do y'all want to hear me talk about for tomorrow's podcast? And I got about 20 responses. But first, I got this email back on March 21st from a listener named Jason. Okay. So he said, every once in a while, you'll do a Q&A type show. Maybe this will provide a talking point. What do you make of the importance of guilt or perceived guilt in TMS? I have noted with some interest that on the podcast, you have mentioned TMS flare-ups you have had when you make big purchases, specifically cars. While I sell cars for a living, and while I can't say that I feel all caps guilty, I dislike the fact that some customers get a square deal. Usually those who can easily afford the vehicle, have great credit, and others pay way more, usually those in a worse position. I hate the negotiation part. I hate having the people feel like they might have paid too much or have buyer's remorse. And even more, I hate the systemic injustices that this kind of crap is but a small part of. I got to make a living and I'm not a liar, but participating in this kind of system doesn't sit well with me. I think this could be contributing to my TMS and I wonder what you make of it. That's a tough one. I mean, the way that I interpret that question is I'm going to use the word ethical. I'm not saying that you're dishonest or not ethical, but ethical seems to be the most simple way that I can put this. You sort of feel like your job is unethical and the things that you do could potentially be unethical, or at least they don't jive with your sort of your moral standards. And that certainly is a collision course, right? That's the that truly is the divided mind. I talked, I can't remember, it was a couple weeks ago maybe, but about the concept of like the ego and the id and the superego, which is in the center kind of refereeing that. So in this case, the id is the one that likes making the money, has to make a living, probably likes some of the elements of sales as well. I know there are some things that I don't like about sales and other things that I think are a lot of fun. But then the flip side of that, you know, you also just don't really like some of the positions that sort of a job puts you in. And so how can you reconcile the two? The good thing is that the types of conflicts that occur that do give us symptoms are the ones that are probably not right out in front of you. So it could be contributing to your symptoms, but it probably isn't. It's really up to you. You know, in my world, in my line of selling, one of the things that I do is if I feel like there is a bad fit for a customer, even if I know that that customer will bring me money or it'll bring me a deal or whatever the case is, if I don't feel like it's going to be a great fit for them, I tell them it's not going to be. And I'll even make a recommendation on a competing service that maybe is a better fit for them. even if I know it's going to cost me money and it's going to cost me recognition and it's going to cost me prestige and all these different things that we as salespeople really enjoy, and I do have to make a living too. But at the same time, just kind of like, you know, 10 years ago, Eddie, even 5 years ago, Eddie, I could have been able to make a lot of justifications. But at this point in time, I have the ability to just say, hey, I'm going to focus and spend a lot of attention and time on people that I think that I can really, 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 really help and give this great service and great deal to. And then the people that either are going to get a raw deal or it's not the best fit for them, I just have to be open and honest with them. And that's just sort of how I see it at this point in time. I make less money now than I did when I saw it the other way, but that's just the way that it is. So I don't know how helpful that is. But I certainly understand what you're talking about. Sales guys, it is a tough job, and saleswomen, it's a tough job for sure. Okay. So Michael had asked, nocebo for meds. So how I'm going to interpret this is, let's say that I am at the gym and I pull a muscle, or I feel like I'm pulling a muscle, or whatever the case is. And I go and I take a Advil, or I go and take a Tylenol or whatever, and it makes me feel better. And I then assume that it was the medicine that made me feel better. Okay, could be. It all has to do with intent, right? So if you take these things just knowing that it's going to sort of help maybe aid you a little bit in your symptoms, but ultimately that's not the real cause, then I think that's really the big difference. Like, that's the secret sauce on this. As a good example, Saturday night, I went to bed. I just way overdid it on my birthday with food nonstop, alcohol, sweets, all sorts of food, barbecue, everything that you could imagine. I woke up about, 1:30 in the morning, and I just had like blistering heartburn. And eventually I made myself fall asleep, and I actually was thinking about, hey, maybe this is a TMS type thing. And that was enough to get me asleep. The next morning I still kind of was hurting a little bit, and I did take some Tums, right? Because I know that, okay, it's going to give me some symptom relief, but ultimately that's not the root of the issue. But God, I just want to get through this Sunday morning and enjoy my cup of coffee, and that's it. Hasn't been an issue since then, and it's completely over. So I think that it has to do with intent. One quote that I really love that Nicole Sachs talks about a lot of the time is that there's a big distinction between coming from a place of love and coming from a place of fear. So if you're taking medicine with the intent that this is the end-all be-all solution to the problem, then maybe it's going to end up contributing and being a part of the problem. So from Sarah, TMS healing alongside mental health conditions and legit medical or structural issues that require treatment or medication. Somebody commented on this and said, yes, it's hard to heal from TMS when you have a mental illness such as depression. So I can't speak. I can't speak specifically to what it is that to the depression part of that. I just don't know enough about it. I don't want to make any assumptions. I do know that Steve Ozanich, who's very who is very well versed in this area of expertise, speaks as if they are one and the same. And I know that Howard Schubiner has a book that's very similar to Unlearn Your Pain, called Unlearn Your Anxiety and Depression. Maybe it's Unlearn Your Depression. It's one of the two. So him saying that those are coming from the same place, that might be a good indicator for you that it may not be something to worry about. And I think that, again, back in the 70s and 80s, Sarno would talk about this notion of ulcers. Everybody would get ulcers. It was like the in thing. It was the vogue thing. And then back pain became the vogue thing, the in thing. And now, unfortunately, depression in a lot of ways and anxiety in a lot of ways, people are sort of almost maybe not diagnosing themselves with it. That might not be the right term, but certainly they are like the vogue thing. So being able to keep that kind of thing into perspective and just not, you know, drive yourself crazy by trying to solve these two things, because they might just be the exact same thing. So back to Sarah's original question, TMS healing alongside mental health conditions. So I focused a little bit on that, or structural issues that require treatment or medication. You know, the challenge is really, what is structural that requires treatment? If we're talking about a broken bone, certainly that's one of the exemptions. But soft tissue issues and tendonitis and all these other kind of things that people are regularly healing from and, you know, being symptom free from in rapid recovery, by journaling or meditation, or, you know, sort of take your TMS treatment du jour, they're doing it in those ways. So you really have to make the determination, is this a something that requires treatment or not? And the sort of the telltale sign for that, at least when I interviewed Dr. Schubiner, and go back and listen to that interview if you haven't already, But he had basically said that if it's a injury that is not getting little by little better each day, if it's staying in the same place, meaning level of pain, or it's getting worse, or it's kind of waxing and waning, it's kind of like case closed. That's where you sort of know that it's a bullshit TMS issue. And that's kind of how I would approach this if I were you. From Melanie, chronic tiredness. That's tough because I don't know exactly what you're talking about. I guess that I'll just say feeling fatigued or feeling run down or whatever the case is. I think sometimes it's just like sort of sitting around and waiting for the days and times to pass can almost make you tired in itself. So just honestly, as small as this sounds, getting out for a walk and being in nature and all that kind of stuff, just to sort of give yourself a little bit of a break from the monotony and from the same old stuff can really be a big change. So that might seem small, but that's kind of what I think about. From Tony, knowing all that you know now about TMS, would you have gone forward with your shoulder surgery if you had the same situation today? How does one determine when to actually go under the knife? No, I can unequivocally say that I would not have gotten the shoulder surgery if I knew what I know now. And I'll tell you why. So I sustained that shoulder injury in October of that particular of the year before, 2015. And several months had passed and it was getting worse and worse and worse for about 2.5 or so months. And then when I had my MRI and they told me what the injury was. In fact, I remember that the medical assistant had let me into the doctor's office where I was going to get the results of the MRI. And the computer was on and I could see what the diagnosis was written in the description, like what the radiologist's impressions were. And I saw, you know, I just saw the word tear. And I, oh no, and I'm feeling worse and all this kind of stuff. And but Dr. Jurek came in and she had told me that, you know, it certainly is an issue and certainly should be addressed, but you don't have to be in a hurry to do it. And I had some vacations and things like that coming up. And she encouraged me to get back to sport and doing what I wanted to do. And if it starts to hurt, then back off a little bit, but that I was going to be fine. And that little sense of just confidence, I didn't take another painkiller after that. And I felt rapidly better as the days went on. And then 2 months later, I ended up scheduling, you know, I ended up having surgery because I'd scheduled with a different surgeon, one that I, you know, was saying, hey, you need to have surgery now. But I think it was just that what Dr. Jurek told me, because when she said that, you know, you're going to be fine, I rolled into the gym later on that day and I did clean and jerks and I did snatches and I did, you know, pretty much anything that I would have normally done. And it went well. And I really didn't have much residual pain after that. So that tells me that, and even though when the surgery finally happened and they, you know, he came in, the surgeon came into the post-op room and he said, man, you know, it was something like this, man, I'm sure glad that you came in. It was a, you know, it was hanging on by a thread and, you know, all those kind of things that visually I just kept thinking, there's a video of me that I have on YouTube. And if you want to see it, let me know and I'll send it out. But, there's a video of me, that my wife had taken where I'm saying, you know, thank God I had the surgery done. Cause he said that I was really, really messed up and I had all these different, sutures and anchors to secure to secure my shoulder together. But why would I have felt so good going in? There's not really a medical explanation for that, right? Why did I feel fine? Why did I feel so good going in despite everything being a mess? So it was diagnosed with a torn labrum or torn rotator cuff and a fracture at the top of my arm. Well, even if that stuff showed on imaging and even if you physically saw it in the shoulder capsule, the fact that I felt essentially symptom-free going in should really tell you all that you need to know. So no, I would not have had that done. You know, I had it done and it is what it is. And I, you know, my shoulder feels fine now. I don't have any restrictions. Sometimes when I do snatches, my left arm doesn't go as full in external rotation as the right side. I think they crank down on that capsule pretty hard to get it to make sure that it was never really going to externally rotate or likely not dislocate again unless it was a violent trauma. But yeah, I don't think I needed it. And you know, I can't take back any time, but really would have been nice to have that whole summer of 2016 of my life back for motorcycle riding and doing all the stuff that I wanted to do. Tips for talking with kids about the TMS concept from Preetha. That's a great question. So my daughters, I have two of them. I don't think that you need to talk about TMS necessarily. If you can teach them to talk about their emotions. Like with Zoe as an example, she's six. She has very big feelings sometimes. And when she's feeling really upset, one thing that my wife and I have said, and Audrey too, they're feeling really upset or they're screaming and crying. You know, kids sometimes, they just keep screaming and they keep crying. And even if it's the last thing that you want to hear, they need to be able to get that out and actually experience the sadness. So we always tell them, you know, you can yell and you can scream and you can be really, really angry, but you got to go in the other room to do it. Because expressing it out to us, I always say that the opposite of repression is not expression, but rather it is experience. They need to experience that on their own. It has nothing to do with Jenny or myself or one of the other kids or the animals or whatever. It's fine. You can scream your head off, but you got to do it in the other room. And that's kind of the way that it is to it. So, you know, the whole idea, I love Michael Galinsky's quote in All the Rage where he said, I don't think that we can teach our kids to have these things not happen, symptoms not happen, all that kind of stuff. But what we can do is give them the keys to the gym. And really the keys to the gym, to me, would mean giving them the necessary tools and know-how to cope with these things on their own so that they don't have an issue down the road. So hopefully that's helpful. From Marilyn, chronic fatigue, just see chronic tiredness above. I see it as exactly the same thing. It's just like any other symptom. When it goes like symptom by symptom, the solution is exactly the same for all these things. You know, I know that the ideal scenario is that if you have elbow pain and you're diagnosed with epicondylitis, that you're going to see somebody else diagnosed with epicondylitis and that means it's okay. But tell me if I'm wrong. I sort of feel that even if you did talk to somebody with epicondylitis, that's from a Seinfeld episode, epicondylitis, that even if they said that they healed themselves completely, that still might not be enough to give you 100% belief. So really all symptoms are pretty much the same. And the next question from Kim about fibromyalgia, muscle tightness, and weakness, same kind of idea. Again, if we're saying Sarno's quote, it is a oxygen deprivation issue. If we're going more on the Schumacher, David Clark, those kind of people's thought, then it's a neural pathway issue. And it doesn't really matter what's the mechanism that's causing the symptoms. You just need to know that the solution is a mental or emotional exercise and not anything that you can do physically. Marianne, how to relax a tense body? I think I feel calm, but physically my body is tense. So really, you just need to be able to experience the chaos that's going on internally. So for me, and I've talked a lot about this, it's more of a somatic experience. For some people, it's journaling. And I think for some people, journaling helps them get to a point of where they can actually experience. Because it's tough sometimes because we intellectualize everything just as people. That's what human beings, especially adults, do, is that we start thinking about these things that make us angry, but we never get past thinking and we never get into feeling or experiencing. So we write out these memories of these issues. And the thought is that if you can write them down, then you'll start to experience them internally. So I would say that's really the fastest way. Fibro from James, see above. Emily, can you tell us about how you got into weightlifting? I don't remember hearing it on the podcast before. So great question. I love the non-pain question. This is very nice to see, actually. So Emily's from Houston. Until I was, how old would I have been? 26. I was a go to the gym, get on the elliptical, treadmill, stair stepper, you know, do 30 minutes of weights, that kind of thing. And I was very skinny. I was like 140 or so pounds or something like that when I was doing that stuff. And a friend of mine for a year, she was trying to get me to go and try CrossFit. And I kept saying, gosh, I'm going from $20 a month at my gym and it's working fine, all this kind of stuff, to now bumping it up to $100 or $150 a month. I just can't fathom, and it's just so expensive and all this kind of stuff. And I just couldn't get past that. That was a mental block for a good year. And then I was just kind of like, you know, I don't go out and get coffee. I don't go out to bars. I don't, you know, there's a lot of things that I don't spend any money on. And so maybe this is the good investment, and maybe I'll think it's a lot of fun. So I went one day and I was fucking hooked. And then I started doing exclusive weightlifting training about a year and a half after that. If you go to a CrossFit class, it's usually a blend of like high intensity interval training and weightlifting. But I started to really like the weightlifting side of it. I liked the technical aspect of doing just the snatch and the clean and jerk. I kind of feel like with powerlifting, which is the squat, deadlift, and the bench, that you can almost, strength doesn't have anywhere to hide. So it's like you can pick up this weight or you cannot. And I find oftentimes if I'm just kind of mentally drained, powerlifting is a lot better for me to try for that day, doing bench or doing squat or doing a deadlift, just because it doesn't take a lot of mental expenditure, I see. But weightlifting, the snatch, the clean and jerk relies so heavily on timing and technicality and things like that, that it becomes a lot more challenging. So a lot of the time, though, if you see weightlifters, they have a certain body type where almost like they don't look like they work out at all in a lot of cases. So that's one of the challenges, too. But that's how I got into weightlifting. My first meet competition was January 7th or something, 2014. And then I competed that February, that March, that April, that May. And then I didn't compete again until the following year in 2015. And then didn't compete again until 2017, and I haven't competed in a weightlifting competition since then. I've done quite a few CrossFit competitions since then, but I always look forward to the weightlifting and strength components of that. And that's regularly what I do now. Again, if you follow me on Instagram, you'll see a lot of that kind of stuff, but that is my main training domain at this point. Lauren, who I connected with on Instagram and made kind of an ass out of myself the other day because I didn't realize which Lauren it was. Can you insert a quick little motivational talk at the end? Like what you were saying on a recent podcast, difference of doing something because you're motivated versus doing something because you love to do it. How to keep going and doing and getting the motivation and inspiration to do so. The things you love when you feel like total shit and get freaked out because you feel worse after walking, working out, that kind of thing. Again, it just has to come from, you have to be able to be at a place in your life where you only do things that you enjoy. Like I've really only got the real estate to do the things that I really, really enjoy at this point in time. So I'll do my day job, but I'm going to incorporate as much of my own time in that as I can. Walk the dog at lunch, go play fetch with her, go ride my skateboard, go ride my motorcycle, go ride my bicycle, whatever the case is, and just find as many elements. In order to do that with my job, I need to be far more efficient than maybe other people can be. I see some people that work crazy hours, but they're not all that efficient sometimes, and their tasks get spread out an awfully long time. It's one of the reasons that I don't think I could really ever get into like a management role, just because I want all the time to be for me and not really for anybody else. That may sound selfish, but at the end of the day, whenever it is that I die, nobody's going to put on my grave that here's Eddie. He was really great at his job. It's just not going to happen. It's going to be that he did a lot of things he enjoyed. He loved riding motorcycles. He was great with his kids. He played all the time. He was, you know, he's a nice guy, whatever it is, that kind of thing. So really, in essence, it just needs to come down to doing things that you really, really thoroughly enjoy and that give you purpose and meaning and hope and make you smile and give, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's really what I would say. Gina says, agree with tensing, how to relax and remember to breathe. It's really just paying attention. If it's remembering to breathe, it's really just paying attention and being intentional with it. And, you know, meditation is a great way to do that, or even 3 to 5 minutes of diaphragmatic breathing that you're really paying attention to. But with tensing, I mean, again, that's just giving your nervous system a break. And I think somatic experiencing is the secret sauce there. Cindy, anything on moving arthritis? Mine is in my lower back and it moves from side to side every day. Not really specific to that, but I will say that if you have symptoms that are moving around in any way, shape, or form, there is nothing anatomical that could be occurring outside of like a TMS type of a thing, because the body just doesn't work that way. Rick, symptoms other than pain. I like this is the one to wrap it up. We're already 25 minutes in. So I was kind of thinking, what could Rick be talking about? And I think that maybe the best couple of examples that I would have is that for years, for 10 years or so before I found Sarno's work, I was on a daily cocktail of several different prescription medications for asthma and allergies. So I would take an inhaler before every workout, but I took Singulair every morning. I took Flonase every morning. I took Claritin every morning, like prescription strength Claritin every single morning. And I just needed those things to get through the day. And now I haven't taken one in 2.5 or 3 years at all. And I used to not be able to even get through a day without having all of them. So that's one that I would say is a pretty big one. But also just like a dairy allergy, like a mystery dairy allergy that popped up for me at the end of 2013. Because I would have like ice cream every single day, never had an issue, had a lot of cereal, that kind of stuff. And then one day at the end of 2013, it just started making me feel miserable all the time. And I avoided it like the plague. And I would call restaurants ahead of time. And what is in your bread? And all that kind of stuff. And then just thought, okay, it's got to be the same kind of thing. And I ate dairy for a while, and then I kind of got away from it for a while. And then my wife just brought it back up a few months, you know, maybe 4 to 6 months ago, and just said, why are you giving that dairy any sort of a stronghold over you? Just, you know, do whatever. And, I've had it ever since. I make this really amazing, I learned it on TikTok, but it's this really amazing breakfast crunch wrap in my air fryer with, it's got two layers of cheese in it, and it's got bacon, and it's got eggs, and it's a big giant tortilla and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I'm eating Lucky Charms with my kids with real cow's milk on St. Patrick's Day. And, I'm just not scared of it anymore. Having, you know, real Ben and Jerry's, what was it called? Cookies and milk ice cream a couple of weeks ago. Like, oh my God. And then I have donuts with my kids every Saturday. I don't work out on Saturday or Sunday most of the time, and we'll go get donuts and then we'll go on a hike. And, it's great to have that kind of power. So I'd say asthma, allergies, and, food intolerances are good places to start for symptoms other than pain. All right, 26 minutes. That's what I got for everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to go pick my daughter up. She just had her first day of in-person learning in almost 400 days. So I'm excited to hear her talk all about it. Hope you all have a great rest of the week, and I will see you next week.